24 hours previous to the start of the fast, you could not eat a meal of, that had more than one course in it. I mean, you couldn't eat, I mean, it was only
salad,
or only...
Baked
potato. If it was hairy, it was, yeah.
Only dessert. Only Haagen-Dazs.
You could not eat meat, and you could not drink wine.
Wow. That's 24 hours before.
Yeah.
Wow, no wine.
But again, this is the culture that there was a wine jar on every table all the time. The bed is turned over, the chairs are turned over, the couches
are... Are we going to do that at the ring?
No, because it's not our property. We're going to do it. We're going to sit outside. And sleeping and sitting on the ground is a sign of mourning. It's the mourning.
Oh, wow.
And the reason you're mourning, if you have any sense, is that it's the recognition that your flesh isn't going to enter the promise. That your name isn't written in the book of life. That you're not going to heaven. It's the morning of all of your hopes and dreams, and both in the spirit and in the natural. On the ninth of Ab, it was decreed by God that the fathers could not enter the promise and while they were in the wilderness.
What? Actually, this is what brought it on this afternoon. Okay. We're studying this poem where Milton is kind of mourning all the stuff that he's left behind, all the studying of breathing, learning, and blah. Well, he finds this tricky way before the end of the poem to like slip back in there like he's not really mourning and he hadn't really lost it, right? And so this was supposed to be like a big deal and really good in the poem that he had done this. And I was going, you know, this is like... But it set me off on the idea of mourning. And then I kept thinking about Paul saying, I count these things but dunks. You know, but he wasn't... At that point, any mourning in Paul would have been an ungood thing. Mm-hmm. So, I mean...
That would have been like worshiping it.
I mean, I don't understand... I guess I can understand. I can understand being wrecked and saying, I'm not going to heaven. I'm screwed. And I can also understand saying, it's all taken care of. Everything's all right. But I guess I have a hard time bridging them without being sneaky about it, pretending like you're going to heaven and really thinking you're dragging all that stuff up there with you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Let me tell you what the people's response to this was. Numbers 14, verse 1. And all the congregation lifted up their voice. The word lifted up there means it's lamented, and they cried and lament. I mean, it's wailed. And all the congregation, this took place on the ninth of Ab, on the fast of Ab. And all the congregation lifted up their voice and cried, and the people wept that night. And all the children of Israel mourned against Moses and against Aaron. Huh?
Murmuring.
Oh. That's good. Otherwise, and all the children of Israel murmured against Moses and against Aaron, and the whole congregation said unto them, would God that we had died in the land of Egypt, or would God we had died in this wilderness? And wherefore hath the Lord brought us into this land to fall by the sword, that our wives and our children should be a prey? Were it not better for us to return unto Egypt? And they said one to another, let us make a captain, and let us return into Egypt. Now, anyway, on and on, but the idea, it's so awesome to think that a people, they're all right in all of their complaints. Why didn't you let us die in Egypt? Why didn't you let us die in the wilderness? Why, let's go back there. six, who knows? Nobody knows the number, but there were 600,000 men of war and their families and the mixed multitude that escaped Egypt during the Exodus. His estimates range that meant represented anywhere from 2.5 to 6 million people. In the natural, two of them made it to the promise. Flesh and blood shall not inherit the kingdom. The best this flesh can be is the same position. It's Joshua and Caleb. Joshua was the type of Christ. In fact, Joshua is. It's what it means, Jesus. Caleb was the Canaanite, who was the friend of the bridegroom. The best the flesh can be is the friend of the bridegroom. And through that mystery, out of that comes the bride. Now we are the body of Christ, and members in particular. It requires a renewal of the mind that is so drastic that we've only begun to see how drastic it is. It requires a renewal of the mind that it's not even possible to conceive of. It can only be experienced. Now, I've told you all so often that for Israel, for the Hebrews, there was no such thing as history. The language was written, and the thought process was established so that as this is read, it's experienced. Never, ever, 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 the word is it. The Hebrews or Israel had never had history. They only had prophecy. And the prophecy only connected or concerned itself with the next instant, the light for the path, for the next step. Well, that's why I've been so insistent with you over the years that you have to experience this. And it's so foreign to our way of thinking. It's so foreign to the English language. Really foreign to any language except Hebrew. The idea, you understand, it's impossible in any other language that I'm aware of to consider stuff that happened to some other people as prophecy. The language doesn't permit it. The style of thinking that you go through doesn't permit that to happen. That's why for us it's so radical that there be this kind of a renewal of our mind. That we might be transformed by the renewing of our mind. The only way I know how to do it, we are the only people I know that do this dumb stuff in the whole world. In the whole, there's 5 billion people. As far as I know, we are the only people that are doing what we do. I don't know of one Jewish group anywhere in the world, even the Hasidim, who celebrate the Fast of Tammuz or the Fast of Av. Now there might be, but I don't know of them. I certainly know of no other group that calls themselves by the name of Christ that does what we do. It's weird. But I don't know how else to do it. The only thing I know is everything else that I could conceive of didn't do it. And I'm reminded of what Jim Sheehan said the night that he left. No. Everything else that he has been connected with got boring. This is the only thing that he's ever been involved with that consistently blew his mind. So, there's no answer to your question. There's no answer to that. There's only an experiencing of the question. What Milton's finessing of
your own warning.
Yeah.
Morning.
That's why.
Morning.
I mean, this may...
I'll say this. First time I came and had Passover, that was just like one of the greatest times I ever had. Just, I mean, the actual Passover meal. Like, because like all of a sudden the New Testament made sense.
Yeah.
And I feel the same about the other piece, even though I don't really want to sit around the ground. Another way I do.
Well, the promise is in Zechariah that this is the fast of the fifth month. The fast of the fourth, the fast of the fifth, the fast of the tenth, etc., etc., shall be turned to feasts, a day of gladness, a day of joy. That doesn't mean that we're not going to fast and instead we're going to have a feast. It means that internally a mystery takes place. And all of a sudden, you're looking at life with new eyes. Now, all of you already do that. I mean, there's not one of you that doesn't look at life totally different than you have in your past. But it's like, if there were... I mean, our eyes, the cloud, the scales are being slowly removed from our eyes so we may behold the wonder of Him. We can't behold, and it offers absolutely no lasting stimulus to behold the wonder of God in relationship to us. That can only produce something weird, something sick, something... It's really, it can only produce homosexuality in truth. We must be about beholding Him, and Him only. That's wild. That's a wild thing. I got to say this because it's just hitting me several times tonight, and I've always ignored it. I'm going to, as Paul says, I'm going to speak as a fool for a minute. None of this could have been made manifest unless it cost me my life. I mean, you all forget that I had a reasonably good career. You know, I had a lot of stuff going for me, even in a religious world, after I'd become a believer. You know, there was all kinds of pressure for me to become an evangelist. But there was something that wasn't quite right in it. It wasn't something that I could even articulate. It was a feeling that I had to trust internally that said this wasn't it. Now, the only reason I'm bringing that up is you have to follow that same thing. You have to come out. I mean, you can't believe anything blindly, especially for me. Because then you will rob yourself of the riches of His glory. If you don't follow your impulse and your response, then you will rob God. You rob us. You know, but a lot of times you're afraid to do that because you know, you perceive me as having a strong personality. What?
You do.
No,
that's all. That's all kept me quiet. So, across, I mean, basically, by yesterday, it was just a constant yammer in my head.
Yeah.
Part of my head having a fight with you, and then you having a fight with me, and me leaving, and then I stop and say, "Look, this is stupid. You wouldn't say those things to you anyway. You would win anyway. You wouldn't win."
Yeah.
And then you would start over again.
Yeah, like small dog arguing.
Well, anyway.
That's only part of the equation. I mean, that's valid. That's part of the equation, but that's only part of it. There's another part, at least one other part of it. That is, over these 4 years, specifically, but before that, the 4 years specifically, I've repeatedly seen how devious my mind is, how sneaky, how deceptive, et cetera, et cetera, at 100 times, 200 times, 300 times. Later, it's become clear that what you were telling me was accurate, and what I was telling you was not accurate. I've said this before, but based on that, I've learned to give you the benefit of the doubt. In addition to that, part of it is when I get crazy, I just go, oh shit, he's going to do this to me or that. He's not all me.
Well, I'm not a nice guy, I'm fast. I mean, who knows what the hell's going to happen? You're not nice and fast either.
Yeah,
I'm
so
fast.
I'm quiet.
Nobody be late.
Nobody be late.
Yeah. I have a mistake.
I think we're going to start
going. Would you make some coffee so we can move
right? Oh, you'll love this. No, Doug gave me my birthday. A clock.
Why is your birthday?
It was Labor Day.
Oh, and you're so.
I forgot that.
Well, let me read this. This great. You all understand that we've talked about it. I'm thinking this group, but the book of Ephesians is equivalent to the book of Joshua in the Old Testament, and Joshua is the book that describes and begins to describe life in the promise, different kinds of battles going on. And Ephesians begins to describe the life in the promise. And Paul, in the first chapter, has the most brilliant of all prayers that I've ever read. And let me read it. He said, "After I heard of your faith in the Lord and love unto the saints, then I cease not to give thanks for you, making mention of you always in my prayer, that the God of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of glory, may give unto you the spirit of wisdom and revelation." That's not what it says. It says, "May give unto you the spirit of wisdom and revelation in the knowledge of him." What I used to think revelation was when I saw something. That's not revelation. Revelation is seeing him, not something. That the eyes of your understanding being enlightened. That's an interesting metaphor, your eyes being enlightened. That you may know what is the hope of your calling. It doesn't say that. It says that you may know what is the hope of his calling. Aren't you tired of being the subject of your sentences? Now, the alternative is that you may know the hope of his calling. That's pretty wild. I mean, you always want to know what's the hope of my calling. God says, don't even consider it. Don't even think about it. Don't waste a second on it. Learn and see the hope of his calling. And what the riches of the glory of your inheritance is. It doesn't say that either. It says, and learn what is the riches of the glory of his inheritance in the saints. Well, who cares what his inheritance is? The world can't understand that. Babylon can't understand it. Egypt can't understand it. We're going to study. I got forced into a battle I didn't want any part of yet last night. And it's the Battle of Elam. Elam is one of the enemies that's trying to get you.
So like Elam showed up and fought with you?
Elam showed up and we had a battle.
Oh, okay.
And Elam is a tribe of people that were sort of, well, I have the wrong maps up there and I don't feel like getting the right one. But they were bounded by Media, Persia, and Babylon. But the word, and they were in the mountains. And there, the word Elam means hidden. Gary is the chief of the Elamites among us.
Well, no, he's working on my fossil today.
I'm glad he wasn't doing brain surgery on me today.
Yeah, I had a weird ass dream about Gary last night. I didn't even know this was going on. It was weird.
Were you in trouble or was he?
Well, there's a lot of similarity. The eyes of your understanding being enlightened, that you may know what is the hope of his calling and what the riches of the glory of his inheritance in the saints and what is the exceeding greatness of his power to us. Who believe? According to the working of his mighty power, which he wrought in Christ when he raised him from the dead and set him at his own right hand in the heavenly, far above all principality, all Elamites, all power, all might, all dominion, and every name that is named, not only in this world, but also in that which is to come, and hath put all things under his feet. Anyway, the prayer, the mystery, everything is locked up into the eyes of your understanding being enlightened to see his inheritance, his understanding, his glory, his riches. The purpose of the fasts, especially of Yom Kippur and of Ab, are to cause you to see that. You can't see it intellectually. You can only see it experientially. Yeah. His inheritance, his glory, his riches, his understanding, his life. Then when you see that, you can say with Paul, for me to live is Christ. Now, the weirdest thing happens, and you've got to start knowing it. I mean, you've seen the evidence. Tyra and I'm going to tell you about Tyra. Right now, Tyra has more money than she's ever had in her life. She's got less debt, almost none now, than she's ever had in her life. She's got, and she recognizes all this, she's got a family of people who she believes is more precious than her own life. She has found the mystery of the universe, the pearl of great price. She's looking into things that angels desire to look into. Her work, her career, if you will, or the things that she occupies her time with now, it's the most interesting stuff she's ever done. She's producing, or with Harry, a deal. I mean, she's becoming a television kind of producer. You know, she's doing all kinds of neat stuff. And she was so depressed the other night that she couldn't even move.
I knew that was going to fall. Mm-hmm. I was just waiting for you to say that because it's always that way.
Mm-hmm. Well, she got it. I've never been as mad in my entire life as I was. And it caused me to see that, I mean, I literally, it's like, I've seen it 1,000 times with us, all of us. I literally tried to push her away. Get out of here. You know, I can't take this anymore. And I've done it all, I think, to every one of you, almost. But something happens. When we have to be pushed to the outer boundary. I mean, I've never made an attempt to try to get any of you to stay. I don't think. Maybe I have. I don't remember. I've certainly never given you any reason to like me by anybody's standards. You know, but a thing takes place. I mean, somehow all of a sudden when we push the things to the horizon, to the envelope, he's there. Always. 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 And when he is there, then there's love. Unfeigned. I'm just babbling.
I'm compelled to say this. I don't want to leave that place of the past. I don't want to leave that place. I hate to see the sense of it.
Okay, speak as a fool and get it over with.
Yeah, I don't want to leave that place until I see it.
Man.
I must see it.
Okay, Jeremiah 49. It's after Isaiah, before Ezekiel.
Yeah.
Jeremiah 49, verse 34. Now remember that Elam was physically located. They were an enemy of Israel. They were physically located in the high places, in the mountains, around Media, Persia, and Babylon. But they were enemies of Israel. And they, some of them came back into Israel when they mixed and married and all that kind of stuff. Trust me in this, there are some Elamites in you. Remember, this is the metaphor. This is the parable. The word of the Lord that came to Jeremiah, and by the way, Jeremiah is the prophet of Ab.
What verse?
34. The word of the Lord that came to Jeremiah the prophet against Elam in the beginning of the reign of Zedekiah, king of Judah, saying, Thus saith the Lord of hosts, Behold, I will break the bow of Elam, the chief of their might. Now, always when it talks about the bow, it's talking about the strength or the power or his ability to attack. And upon Elam will I bring the four winds from the four quarters of heaven, and will scatter them toward all those winds, and there shall be no nation. Now the word nation there is Am. There is no shall be no people, whither the outcast of Elam shall not come. For I will cause Elam to be dismayed before their enemies, and before them that seek their life, and I will bring evil upon them, even my fierce anger, saith the Lord, and I will send the sword after them till I have consumed them. Now last night that's where I stopped, because we were in battle direct with an Elamite. But then it says, and I will set my throne in Elam, and will destroy from thence the king and the princes of Elam, saith the Lord. And it shall come to pass in the latter day that I will bring again the captivity of Elam, saith the Lord. In other words, bring again means to He will cause it to happen. He will cause... this is simply another declaration of what Paul said in 2 Corinthians, that he's going to cast down imaginations in every high place that exalteth itself against the knowledge of God, and bring into captivity every Elam or thought to the obedience of Christ. Got it? Now let's find out about Elam. Go to Isaiah 22. Well, go to 21 first. We're going to read a few verses in 21. The burden of the desert of the sea. Now, I don't know, you've heard me talk about that. As whirlwinds in the south pass through, so it cometh from the desert, from a terrible land. A grievous vision is declared unto me. The treacherous dealer dealeth treacherously, and the spoiler spoileth. Go up, O Elam, besiege, O Media, all the sighing thereof have I made to cease. Therefore are my loins filled with pain. Pangs have taken hold upon me as the pangs of a woman that travaileth. I was bowed down at the hearing of it. I was dismayed at the seeing of it. My heart panted. Fearfulness affrighted me. The night of my pleasure hath he turned into fear unto me. Now these are the readings for this act. What we're going to, I mean, don't be surprised if you're in a little state of fear on the night of Ab. Prepare the table, watch in the... Do you notice that Elam and Media are intimately connected? Media is always the place of mystery, the place of... You know, I told you before, that's where the three wise men came that acknowledged Christ, and they offered him myrrh, frankincense, and gold. Now, I hate to say this to you, but thus far, all you have done for the babe, Jesus, the Elamites, those guys weren't saved. You understand? They traveled thousands of miles across the desert to pay homage to the baby Jesus. So what? That's all you have done thus far. You have been that part of you that has been intimately connected with Elam and Media, has traveled to pay your homage to the Christ child.
It's just a power center.
You got it? Now, you've done all that. Now you're going to be dismayed because it's not going to get you anything. Understand a little bit? Verse 6, For thus saith the Lord, For thus hath the Lord said unto me, Go set a watchman, let him declare what he seeth. And he saw a chariot with a couple of horsemen, and a chariot of asses, and a chariot of camels. And he hearkened diligently with much heed, and he cried, A lion! My Lord, I stand continually upon the watchtower in the daytime, and I am set in my ward whole nights. And behold, here cometh a chariot of men with a couple of horses. And he answered and said, Babylon is fallen, and all the graven images of her gods he hath broken unto the ground. O my threshing and the corn of my floor, for that which I have heard of the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, have I declared unto you. Now, I know a lot of this is kind of mystical, and over time you have to understand it at a different level of your being than you normally do. Okay, now let's skip on up to, because now they're talking about Duman in Arabia, and then it comes, so let's go up to the Valley of Vision in verse 22. These are all the woes and all the stuff. Yeah. The burden of the Valley of Vision. What aileth thee now that thou art wholly gone up to the housetops? Now, that's a metaphor.
That's me.
Jerusalem, each house had on its roof an altar to Baal. And the children gathered wood, and the women burned to make the cakes, and the husbands kindled the fire.
And to the Queen of Heaven.
And the Queen of Heaven. Every house.
And so you go up to the housetop in the spirit, which is just a metaphor for going to your high place. Got it?
Yeah, anytime there's trouble, you always run up to the highest place where you can see.
Right. So you run up every time. You're going to run to the housetop. You know, what happens, you remember, in the Fast of Ab, the walls of Jerusalem have already been, are in the there's a breach in the wall, and the Romans are coming through, and they're destroying everything. And so you're running up to the housetop. Well, I'm like, in the spirit, I'm the Romans. They're coming against your Jerusalem. Now, if the preaching is right, you'll have to run to your housetop. And then your housetop will, every stone of your house is going to get blown away. But what you've done thus far is you've taken the stones of all the houses in your Jerusalem and you've run over and tried to repair the breaches in the wall. So slowly but surely you're being destroyed from the inside out. Am I communicating? What? Okay. The burden of the valley vision. What aileth thee now that thou art wholly gone up to the housetops? Thou that art full of stirs and a tumultuous city, a joyous city. In other words, all the shit's taking place and you're still running around. You got the picture? You're up there having a party while the atomic bombs are falling on you. Thou art full of stirs, a tumultuous city, a joyous city. Thy slain men are not slain with the sword, nor dead in battle. The reason why? Because they're ghosts. That's the thing that's taken place in you all your life, is there's a bunch of these ancestors and ghosts that are running around in your city. And they run around and tell you to do stuff, and you do stuff, and you just, you understand? And they've all had control over you. All thy rulers, in truth, is what it says, are fled together. They are bound by the archers. All that are found in thee are bound together, which have fled from far. Therefore said I, look away from me. I will weep bitterly. Labor not to comfort me because of the spoiling of the daughter of my people. For this is a day of trouble and of treading down and of perplexity. But you're up here, you know, in this, you're up on the rooftop having a party. You got it? Remember I told you, the role, my role in the spirit is in the ancient times, it was that of a tzaddik. The tzaddik had two functions. The first one was to show you the incredible crisis that you're in. And then the second, to show you the help or the life that's immediately available. But it's not available until you acknowledge the crisis. For this is a day of trouble and of treading down and of perplexity by the Lord God of hosts in the valley of vision, breaking down the walls and of crying to the mountains. The valley of vision, where is it? It's right here. The valley of dreams, the valley of sustenance in either assumed future events or past accomplishments. It's the valley of vision. There's no life. There's no now. That great cliche, there's no there, there. You know that? Everybody know what I'm talking about? And Elam bear the quiver with chariots of men and horsemen, and Kerr uncover the shield. Now, Elam
is this hidden part. Elam means hidden. There's a part of you that you've never exposed. Elam is intimately connected with your compulsions, the source of the compulsion. And whatever compulsion or addictive behavior, that's the root of all the compulsions and of all of that behavior is in the Elam portion of you. It's hidden. But the weird part here is that that hidden part, it says, it doesn't make any sense. Elam is the bearing the quiver with chariots of men and horsemen. In other words, that hidden part of you is going to, and it's going to end up, he's carrying the quiver for the arrows by which he's going to be destroyed by. Yeah. And it's like Satan is meant it for evil, but God is turning it to good. Because the very propensities that you've had, the compulsions that you've had, the Elam portion of you, it's not going to be changed. That's why I said to you, your compulsions are okay, and we're going to witness that. And that, once you see you're accepted in the brethren, just as you are, then the fruit of that will be that those things which have been the Elam, or the hidden, the compulsions within you, will be transformed to cause you to fulfill your office in the body of Christ. Without effort.
That's why I said that's where I'm placing my throne.
That's right. You understand?
Wow.
This is big time stuff. Now, Kerr shall be your shield. Now, Kerr, uncover the shield. Kerr is the Hebrew word that means wall. So the very wall that you have built unconsciously all your entire life to protect your Jerusalem that now is going to be the instrument of uncovering its own protection. And the instrument of uncovering the protection will be mercy. When you see and experience and it's witnessed in body that your compulsions are okay, it's going to destroy your mind. Am I communicating a little bit? All right. And it shall come to pass that thy choice... I wonder how other... How do churches handle this stuff?
They don't. It's not there.
It was for another time. Oh, it was another dispensation.
It's in the Old Testament.
Oh, okay. And it shall come to pass that thy choicest valley shall be full of chariots, but it's chariots of war. The chariots just don't hang around in peacetime. The choicest valley in here are the valleys that are the great, the source of your greatest yummies.
Yummies.
That's a technical term.
Show me that in strong.
The choicest valley shall be full of chariots, and the horsemen shall set themselves array at the gate, or at your entrances. Now the reason... You are the horseman for me. In other words, once I expose my compulsions, you know, and you witness that they're accepted, that then Elam has no more power over me, then the instrument by which you communicate to outsiders or to whoever, these are your gates. Okay? I mean, this is hard stuff. I'm not... All right. And he discovered the covering of Judah, and thou didst look in that day to the armor of the house of the forest. Now, the house of the forest is the same place, the armor of the house of the forest, it's the same place that Adam and Eve went to the instant that they saw they were naked, when they ate of the law. They ran and hid themselves in the trees, in the grove. Well, that's what you'll do. Now, this is the sexual component of your compulsions. Now, there's some weird-looking trees you're hiding in, but it has to be open. What? Okay. You have seen also now the breaches of the city of David. Now you have seen past tense, because that was the purpose of the Fast of Tongues, the breach in the wall. That they are many. There's many holes in your armor, in your wall. Bunches and bunches, billions and billions of billions.
Swiss cheese wall.
And you gathered together the waters of the lower pool. Now, here's where we're going to get interesting. You understand that God designed us the way we are to reveal more and more about the Son, that we might be enlightened in our eyes of our understanding would be enlightened in the knowledge of Him. The only reason that we have a need to drink, I mean, we could have just done like, you know, there's enough moisture in the air that our skin could have been designed very, there's a little teeny little gene change, and we would have absorbed by osmosis enough moisture to sustain us. You know, but God said, no, that's not the way to do it. I mean, if I'd have done it, that's the way I'd have done it.
Stand by, my little Jim.
Ready? Message.
But God made you so that you experienced thirst. And so that you experienced hunger. You didn't have to. There's all kinds of food. You could, you know, you can play the yoga games. This is, by the way, more than likely, Adam and Eve originally had the capacity to gather enough. I mean, your body is structured so that is potentially possible to do.
Like live by photosynthesis?
Right. And also to gain all your energy from sunlight. But after the fall, I mean, I won't debate you on that one. I just think that's what the case was. When the fall came, then you, by definition, had to be in a position where you hungered and where you thirsted. And you were only really hungering and thirsting after righteousness. It was never after food for the belly. That's why it's so evil to make food or your appetite your God. Because you're designed so that appetite would show a deeper mystery. Now the mystery is, the solid foods that we need for sustenance are in type the things that are needed to sustain us, the things that give us strength for the moment. Now, there's 1,000,000,000 things that sustain you, many of them in this valley of vision. But we are now dealing with the lower pool. Now, the lower pool was a cistern in Jerusalem. And it was a cistern that, you remember that all of the waters in the temple had to come from the pool of Siloam, which was running water, living water. But the cistern was the place, let me go on. You gathered together the waters of the lower pool, and you have numbered the houses of Jerusalem, and the houses you have broken down to fortify the wall. All your little houses are all these little places that you live in. You know, there are many. It's big. Jerusalem's a big city. In you. And now, when you've started to hear, what you start to do is you start to, there's a house falling down. Well, it's not even the house is falling down. It's that the wall is crumbling. And so you go over and tear down one of these little houses after another to try to repair the wall.
but you repair the wall with untempered mortar, so it can't stand. That's why in the spirit, this is why all of you are still so afraid of me. Because you know that your wall is of untempered mortar. Do you understand this? This is really heavy, so... Okay. So, but you see, the first thing you do is you've got this lower pool that's going on. Then you take these, you're tearing down some of your little houses and fixing the wall. But then, this is the evil one. Verse 11. You made also a ditch or a reservoir between the two walls. Now, between the two walls, there's the place in you that's really sacrosanct. That's your temple. And then there's your sort of normal city. That's the walls of Jerusalem. And the temple has a wall around it, and the Jerusalem has a wall around it. And in between, you made a reservoir between the two walls for the water of the old pool. Now, the old pool, the water, everything about drinking, thirsting, has to do with what it is in the valley of vision that gives you worth. Water is always a type of the wine. That's why Jesus said, as often as you do this in remembrance of me. He was speaking of the Passover Seder, as we all know, but he was also speaking, as often as you take in any kind of liquid or any kind of solid, you're doing it in remembrance of him. So it's you transform all water or all liquid that you drink into the blood of Christ, and you transform all solid food that you eat into the bread of Christ, so that you are always in a state of taking communion. But you got to hear this. The place that you drink in this pool, it's a dead pool. The water's dead. It's a swamp. There's dead alligators in it. There's dead dogs. It's ugly. It's smelly. It has no life. But that's where you have been going to drink for your worth. And normally it is both past and future. You drink for your worth of some past accomplishments. And by the way, anyway, I'll get into that, no confusion. Or you drink for your worth about a future accomplishment. I mean, and there's thousands of other implications. Do you understand me?
Yeah.
You don't want to drink that dead water anymore. Okay. You made a ditch or a reservoir between the two walls for the water of the old pool, but you have not looked unto the maker thereof, neither had respect unto him that fashioned it long ago. And at that day did the Lord God of hosts call to weeping and to mourning. Weeping and mourning. And to baldness. Now the reason baldness is important is it's no covering. The reason you have so many hairs on your body is every hair represents something that you have covered yourself with instead of the Father. Now, in the spirit then, in relationship to the fast, baldness is the recognition that all of your coverings have failed. Your intellect has failed to sustain you. Your looks have failed to sustain you. Your talents have failed to sustain you. Your deviousness has failed to sustain you. And an infinite number of other hairs which have been your covering. Therefore, baldness is your lot in the spirit. That's why, for the most part, when you look at the ancient gods if you go in to look at Babylonian gods and ancient caveman gods they're almost always never have hair. Anyway, that's in the story. All right. And to baldness and to girding with sackcloth. Now the sackcloth, you got to understand sackcloth.
I've seen these religious idiots, they take a burlap bag and put it on themselves and say it's sackcloth. Sackcloth is not made of burlap. Sackcloth in this here is made from the hair of the sacrificed animal. So what it means is when you have covered your loins with sackcloth, it means that you have recognized that you are in a position where you deserve to be the animal that you've laid your hands on in the act of sacrifice. That there is no position of saying, you know, like one Elamite did last night, I don't want to do this anymore. I don't give a fuck if you want to do it anymore. I want you to see your evilness and fall down on the face, your face is dead, and beg for the mercy of the Father. Your lot is death. Not your lot is I want to change. All right. And behold, joy and gladness. You see, they're in baldness and girding. But you are joy and gladness, slaying oxen, killing sheep, eating flesh, drinking wine. Let us eat and drink, for tomorrow we shall die. Tomorrow. Not today. I want to change. I want to be different. That means in the spirit that you're saying, tomorrow I shall die. Well, that's enough. You understand? All of this is intimately connected with Elam.
That's so sneaky. I want to change. It's so sneaky because it's a sneaky way of saying, give me more time. Mm-hmm.
Yes, begging.
All right, I'm starting to hate it when I hear somebody say that. It just drives me insane.
What?
I want to change. I'm tired of, I'm sorry I'm like this, I want to change. Understand a little bit? Ab is connected with the attack on Elah. Frontal attack. That's why compulsions... Compulsions are view of Elam. Heavy stuff. Everybody understand with perfect clarity? Oh yeah. Now, Rex, we talked about this a little bit last night, and so now Rex today said, well, he saw that all he did was live in the Valley of Vision. There's nothing wrong with the Valley of Vision if you let out what's there, if it's not hidden. God made you like you are, but you've got to let it out. It's not if it, because what happens, if it's a private playground, then it, by definition, has to become the dead pool. If it's let out, then you become a river. Out of your belly shall flow rivers of living water. Fish?
Fish.
Okay, you ready for Ab?
Yeah, but he ain't ready for Ab.
Okay, anybody have anything else?
Yeah, see if I have, by chance, if I don't, but see if I happen to have an answering machine that you can let go of for a couple of weeks if Cam really needs it badly.
Take it, big guy.